Hello, and thank you so much for your patience, everybody. I hope you're enjoying dinner. It's really good, I know. And I would just like to introduce our speaker for this evening, Danielle from Santa Barbara, California.
Good evening, everyone. Can you hear me? No, can you hear me now? Gotcha. Okay. See. My name is Daniel. I am a compulsive overeater. And I am not alone from what I understand. And this is the 52nd year anniversary of this organization, which I am very proud to be part of. A lot of us have received a lot of benefits from this program, and a lot of us owe our life to this program, and I'm very grateful. And for that, I would love to give a clap to Happy Birthday, OA. I also want to thank the committee. Thank you, everything, for inviting me. You guys were great. We had miniature turkeys for dinner, and it was good. You can't hear me. You know, you think you're the first woman to tell me that. Okay. Here we go. Okay. So, well, I get feedback. Hello. So, I came into Overeaters Anonymous in 1983, and I came in because of where I was working, they did not want to continue insuring me because I was in a high risk range. So I would probably lose my job. So they sent me to a therapist. And the therapist was this beautiful brunette, gorgeous legs up to here. And she's telling me about I need to lose weight. I said, well, that's news to me. And she said, well, I go to Overeaters Anonymous. Have you ever tried Overeaters Anonymous? I said, no, I'll go. Which ones do you go? Well, I go to these meetings over here, these meetings over there. And I went to every one of those meetings, and she wasn't in any of them. Right? But I stayed. Now, Overeaters Anonymous is founded on basis on the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and the tradition. So we do read the big book. Now, one of the things that I find very baffling is when people say, well, alcoholics don't have to drink anymore. We have to eat and walk the tiger every time. And I think I saw a few tigers right now because our meals were late too. So, oh my God, there's no food. We could have perished at the table at any moment. And the truth is, alcoholics still drink. And pretend this is a bottle of water, you know, whatever bottle of water you want. If I buy a case of bottled water, and I lock myself in my room to drink that bottled water, would that make sense to an alcoholic? No. What the hell no? Now, if I lock myself in with a case of Jack Daniels, that makes sense. But if I lock myself in a room with a case of bottled water, I'm not going to get anything but the urge to go pee every 5 minutes. I'm sorry for the language. I'm still eating. Sorry. That was a 12-step call. The alcoholic uses alcohol for the effect, not for the taste. The alcoholic needs to answer feelings with something that'll suit him or her. And we, as compulsive overeaters, use food for the same reason. Only our food is more benign. You can't get a DUI for driving under the influence of burritos. You know, you don't go to jail for eating too many Twinkies. You know, so there is something there. But alcoholics still drink. They have to, or they die. Whatever I eat at the time, I wanted a certain effect. And before I get to that, my top weight was 400 pounds. And I came in 1983 and did not get serious in this program until 1998 when my body started to break down. My body said, hey man, you know, we have high blood pressure. And my brain says, oh well, let's keep eating anyway, it's all right. And then my body says, hey, we've got diabetes type 2 now. And my brain says, oh, it'll be all right. Now we have acid reflux, sleep apnea. And then I'm at a size 58 waist. And people are wondering, you know, Daniel, you have a weight problem. Well, duh, you know. And we were talking at the table, I hated to fly because I needed a seat extension. And you know, it's embarrassing. So I would always hope, pray for the plane not to be full and ask the stewardess for a seat extension very quietly. Can I have a seat extension? And that friggin' stewardess would walk down the aisle, who wants the seat extension? You know, and I'm even looking around, she was that they want that seat extension because I don't want to say it's me. So, you would think that type of situation, along with breaking chairs, splitting your pants, not fitting in chairs. I hated to go to meetings that had armrests because I couldn't fit. You know what's the worst thing I hate? I hated to get clothes as gifts. You know, if you gave me, and then family members, God bless them, they would say, here, the receipt's there just in case it doesn't fit. So, but go try it on. And sure enough, 9 out of 10, it wouldn't fit, so I had to go back. So you would think all those things would say, hey, there's something wrong with you, let's take action, right? No, that doesn't work that way. Unfortunately, a lot of us continue doing a lot of research in that area. We seem to focus on the symptom rather than the solution. We think that the symptom is, if we address the symptom, we're going to get healed from this disease. And it doesn't work that way, at least not for me. What I found out is that I have a living problem. And I was talking to a young lady earlier, we were talking about, you know, this disease has really been a blessing. Have you ever heard someone say, I'm a compulsive reader, a grateful compulsive reader? And you go, what the F are you talking about being grateful? Why would you be grateful to have this stupid disease that makes you an abnormality in society? You can't fit. Everywhere. I mean, the self-hate is so incredible. Why would I even say I am a grateful compulsive reader? Well, there's a theory behind it. Now, I always believed that as long as I lost the weight, everything would be right. Everything okay. And for those of you that lost the weight, everything's good in your life, correct? It's perfect. Yes, we no longer have problems. It's cool. Life is great. Same thing with the alcoholic. You take away his booze, and you probably think, okay, that's enough. Life is back to normal. So the alcoholic uses the alcohol to sleep, to drink, to relax, to unwind, to socialize, to forget about the shitty day, to forget about the unmet goals and expectations. And he says, Charlie, you keep serving him and I'll tell you when to stop. I use food for the same reason. There's something in me when I overstuff my stomach that it turns off that switch off in me, shuts out the voices, and I go, baby. And we call it like a heroin fix, really. We have the capacity to convert food into an opiate-like feeling. It's amazing. It is amazing. unlike the heroin addict and the alcoholic who have genetics, and it's proven that the brain can produce T cells that will cause the cravings, compulsive overeater doesn't do that yet still feels the same thing as a heroin addict. That's amazing. So you say, well, it must be in the solution of the diet. So, we start like this. I'm not eating sugar this week. All right. I'm not eating white flour this week. Okay, cool. No more fat for me. Salad though. And that drives our family crazy. Because they don't know what to give you anymore. Either you're not eating white flour, you're not eating... Now there's another one that's been thrown in the mix. Organic food. Now, you know, and the gluten-free. Where are the gluten-free nights around here? Oh, it's a plague. It's a communist plague. It's got to be. You know, I come from Santa Barbara, but I lived in L.A. for many years. I love Los Angeles, and I love Santa Barbara. And in Santa Barbara, we're very advanced type. We're Santa Barbara Ventura people. Yeah. They're there, man. I love you guys. And the thing about it is that, you know, we are known for being very politically correct and very ecologically free, green. We're very green. So my sponsor, who happened to be in town with his wife, showed up and I said, let's go out to dinner. And, you know, we haven't seen each other for years. And I'll buy dinner. So I took him to a local restaurant where nobody, no tourists go, just the locals go to this nice place. And he was driving a little too slow. And so all of a sudden, this Prius zooms around us and flips us off. We got flipped off by a Prius. By a friggin' Prius. We have granola terrorists in Santa Barbara. Which proves to say, it means that whatever you're driving, you know, you can flip anyone at any time. So, here is my situation. Bless you. I heard that and recorded it. The thing what I find difficult is, what are my motives for eating? Now, at 400 pounds, I never knew hunger. I only ate. I ate. If you invited me to your house or went to go see you at the family get-together, there better be a lot of food. If we went to a restaurant, which, by the way, you can ask any compulsive overeater where the best restaurants are. And they're the ones with the big, big, big meals, and it's cheap. They'll tell you. They're all here. Okay. Oh, they give you these big portions. And oh, wow, well, that's a good restaurant. I don't handle food normally. I'm not a normal person when it comes to handling food. These poor people that are picking up the plates, they are looking at us like saying, my God, these people are crazy. Well, yes, we are. Yes, we are. We're very crazy. All you have to do is just say there's no more chicken and you're going to see the stampede of people going crazy. You know, validating the parking ticket to get out of here, go to Jack in the Box. I was at a men's retreat one year and we were standing in line and it was chicken and fish. And a vegetarian meal. And I just jokingly said, hey, you know what? They ran out of chicken. And they ran out of chicken, and it just spread. They ran out of chicken. And you see the team, the freaked out men, oh my God, there's no chicken. Amazing. We got as desperate as when we used to hear in the bar, last call. Oh, shit. Four more. Come on, quick. That's how we are. We depend on food to do what it's not supposed to do, but yet we do it enough to get the effect we want. I find that fascinating. They invited me to go lead a retreat in New Orleans, thanks to John, and I'll talk to John later about that one. He said, Danny, you want to lead a retreat in L.A.? I said, oh, of course, I'll go. He wasn't talking about Los Angeles, he was talking about Louisiana. I said, oh, shit, Louisiana. Well, anyway. So I went to Louisiana and said, you know, we want you to come and lead the retreat, but we're kind of concerned about your potty mouth. I said, oh, okay, what's the matter? Well, he says, you know, you tend to cuss a lot, and you know, there are none of the ones that, you know, that that run the place, and you know, we don't want to offend them. So the first thing they did when I showed up, they introduced me to Sister Helen. And I went up to Sister Helen, I said, hi, I'm Mr. Daniel, who I am a potty mouth, but I'm in recovery and I'm going to try my best not to. She says, I hope so. I did not cuss once, so that was really cool. And, you know, Sister Helen gave him 10 points. I don't know what that meant, but she gave him points. I know. Oh, my goodness. Speak into the microphone. Do this. Do that. Do this. Do that. No control issues here. Okay, here we go. So listen, here's the stuff that I find fascinating. If I miss a meal at 400 pounds, I'm going to die before the morning. Okay? If you should give me less of my portion that you said you were going to give me, I'm pissed off. Like, how dare you? So I think many of you heard my story. I was in San Pedro at those years. I was, you know, I was the literature person for the Happy, Joyous, and Free meeting on Friday nights. And I happened to be in San Pedro. And I had to be there Friday night to get the literature set up. And in those days, there was two freaking suitcases of literature. We had about 80 people, you know, meet there. And the ironic part, we met behind the food court. So, wow, heaven. You know, go get a picture, come back to the meeting. And so I have to get dinner because I have to start, you know, I have to go get the, set up the meeting and put up the literature. And I got to eat before or I won't be able to make it. I'll be too weak. So I stopped at Popeye's Chicken and I bought a 5-piece meal of this chicken stuff. So I'm on this old clunker and I'm on the 11 freeway, the Harbor Freeway, and I'm going as fast as I can, and I reach into the box, and I grabbed a chicken leg, and I bit into it, and it was so hot, and it burned my lips. And I said, oh, shit, hot, fuck, damn, it's not going to cool down. I want to get to L.A., and it's not, I'm not going to finish some dinner, that's my head saying. And somewhere along the line, I got the idea to stick the drumstick out the window. And I said, you know, I thought I was a friggin' genius. This is amazing. I can cool down my meal on a friggin' 55 mile an hour, 65 mile an hour. This is so cool. So I ate that chicken leg, and then I reached for the chicken wing, and I stuck it out, and it fell out of my hand. Oh, my God. You know, it's like, I wanted to stop the car. Where in the hell is my chicken wing? It's probably in some jackass's windshield over there. And I got to L.A. missing one damn piece of chicken, which I felt deprived. You know, and now I'm sitting through the whole goddamn meeting. Hi, how are you? Good to see you. What's wrong, Daniel? I lost to L.A. with a chicken wing. Where'd you lose the chicken wing? On the freeway. That sounds stupid, but it was really a very unfortunate situation that happened to me. And you guys may laugh, but this is serious shit. You know, I mean, mess with everything, but don't mess with our food. You know, because that is our lifeblood. And unfortunately, that is the very thing that kills us. After my retreat in New Orleans, I asked Mimi, who God bless her, who was so sweet to me, I said, take me to Ward 9 in New Orleans. I don't want to see the French Quarter. I don't want to see the touristy crap. Take me to Ward 9. That's where the levees first broke. And she took me there. And I walked among houses where people had died. People were so obese they can't get out of their bed to leave. People that were hooked up to oxygen machines that couldn't move, and they died in this life. And that's what I wanted to see, the mortality of this disease. In an alcoholic, you could see it immediately. You could see the antisocial pathological behavior they start to have developing. In us, we're still functioning people. We're teachers, we're doctors, we're counselors, wherever we are, and we're doing all this stuff, and our disease is not causing anybody to come up with some sort of a criminal bill. Nobody. So it used to be tobacco and alcohol were the greatest killers of our society. Today, now it happens to be obesity. And you know what the solution out there is? Eat less, exercise more. That's what they came up with. Are you nuts? You know, if you eat less and you do more exercise, you'll lose what? Thank you for telling me. I've never heard that. I really appreciate that. And then they came out with AIDS candy. You guys remember AIDS candy? Oh, that was good shit, man. I bought, it was a box of chocolates, and they were all like thief candy. And if you eat them, you lose weight. So I ate all of them. Okay, fine. Okay. So enough of that. So I can give you a lot of fat alarms that I don't know. I'm not going to talk about that more. Let's talk about the solution. Here's the thing, what really has been screwing me up for a long time. And I was talking briefly to some people. Yeah, as a child, I was always taught, Danny, if you do your chores or if you do your homework, I'll let you watch TV, let you eat a little more, or go outside and play. That's what I was taught. So I was always had that carrot held in front of me. So I grew up to be a victim. So if I do this, I do that, I'm going to get this. Okay? And we see it a lot today with a lot of youngsters today who are in school. They're going to school, and the professors are telling them, no, nothing against professors, but that's the cheriest job you can ever have today because you'll never be unemployed. And this is really, but what the great part about that is, if you tell them that that degree is going to get them that job they want, ain't going to happen today in our society. And I got kids who have bachelor's degree, master's degrees, waiting tables with student loans. And they feel like they've been cheated. So I have lived like this. Check it out. I used to endure to be entitled to be rewarded. That's how I always lived. So if I endure doing my homework, I'm entitled to do something, so I must either eat or go outside and play or watch TV. That's how we've always lived. We do the same thing with food. I've had a hard day at work. I deserve one more bite. I've been eating this damn diet all week long. I deserve a slice of pie. The reward. It's always food or the reward. The drug addict is always a drug. Alcoholic is always a reward. And if we're able to change that into being a survivor instead of a victim, you'll never get tired of the food plan you're on. Why? Because it's keeping you alive. To me, that food is just a meal. It's not going to change the way I feel. It's not going to change if I'm going to go. Like I said, it's just to nourish my body. Four things this disease robbed me of. It robbed me of my life. I didn't know what a prom was. I was always so fat. Number two, love and be loved. I didn't understand. Since you're obese, you really don't care. Whoever loves you walks into the door is fine enough. To be important. And to feel important. Never. This disease always made me feel like I was a piece of shit. Fourthly, I deserve variety. When you're in this disease, it's always the same thing. Large pizza with a hot, large Diet Coke. That's what it's all about. Because the Diet Coke washes away the calories. You know, it magically takes it away. So I've entitled to be endured to be rewarded. And if you're looking at your food plan that way, you're white knuckling it. And I'm going to shut up. 2 minutes. So the thing about this is that there's a spiritual solution. You need a source. We need a source. May you find him now, it says in the literature. It doesn't say may you find him next week. May you find him tomorrow. May you find him now. Step two, can't you believe that the power greater than ourselves to restore to sanity? That's here. The power to restore you to sanity is right here, right now. So that means either I'm refusing this power and I want to stay in my disease, or I'm open to this power to lead me and guide me. Don't do step three unless you're really serious. Made a decision to turn my world and my life into the care of God. You're in trouble if you're just joking, because God really takes you serious. Look at me, I'm in Santa Barbara. Think about it. Do you really trust God? And I told someone today, do you know what? If you stay here with me right now, presently, right now, all your needs are met. You have life. You're being loved. You have variety. You have importance. It's all there today. But I have a brain that takes me back to the past where my depression lives, and it takes me to the future where my anxiety lives. And I go back and forth, back and forth. And God prepared this day for me, and I'm too busy worrying about the crap that hasn't happened yet or the crap that I did before. And I think God is keeping score of this. Not true. Not true. Into action. When they served us our food to eat, we didn't wonder, what the hell do they mean by us with this plate right here? What are we supposed to do? Well, if we eat it, that's into action. We do. Oh, so what's that new tool they came up with? Action plan. Can you imagine the debate they had? Oh my God. Well, is it exercise or not exercise? Come on, get real, man. It means you have to put something to work. So shut up. Time's up. On that note, I just want to tell you, I'm very proud to be a member of this organization. I love you, Overeaters Anonymous. You gave me my life. I have nothing but gratitude. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for being here with me. And thank you, thank you, thank you for being there for me. And Lonnie, we're going to get on the good foot tonight, right?
Yeah.
All right. Good night. Thank you so much.